F2. Number 2B.
Being quality of mind. Then that pushes us, if we want it or not, we don't have to seek it, it pushes us into the third day where it becomes definite. There's something in us says, now you got it. Guy, you have it. You got it. And you know that you know it. And nobody else has tell you that you know it. You know that you know it now. And you know what you know. It's definite. That's the third day of creation. That's the law of being. That's the law of being. The first cornerstone in our matrix. Now, you know, this question of birth is really a big question. I wanted to take a bit time to point it out because perhaps usually one points out too much the necessity of studying, of thinking. It's all right. I said nothing against that. I want to make that very clear. But the Bible is full of birth, of a woman giving birth, of a woman that is barren, of a woman that wants to have a child, of a woman that prays to have a child. That goes right through the Bible. That big question, can we give birth to the idea? The promise was always there. Abraham had the promise. How long did it take him to bring it forth? The promise was always there. Well, we have the promise. The bride's promise crowns our idea of time. But how do we give birth to it? Shall we leave it as a promise? Eternally a promise? Just as Paul said, the ones in the Old Testament, they had the promise, but they never came into the day of rest. They never found the day of rest. It never realized itself. It never substantialized itself. Well, that can only be done through birth. Spirit unfolds. So, in the Apocalypse, in the chapter on Apocalypse, in Mrs. Eddy's textbook, you also have that question of the woman in travail giving birth as one of the main subjects before she presents the four-sided city. You can see that the four-sided city, that wonderful divine calculus of being, that calculus of being really doesn't make sense, doesn't make living sense to us, doesn't make a real, vital sense to us, until first we have seen that the woman in the Apocalypse has to give birth to the idea. And that birth is a birth of an idea of which Mrs. Eddy says that the idea is great. How does she say it? She says here about the woman in travail, waiting to be delivered. We all seem to be a woman in travail, waiting to be delivered. We all seem to be a woman that knows that there is something big within us, within what we study, that we have touched the big idea, this idea of science. We know it. But it is like as if we would be in travail and say, well, how can we give birth to it? How can it unfold, you see? Well, that's the question. And waiting to be delivered of her sweet promise. It's a sweet promise. And then she says, for great is the idea. It isn't small. It isn't small. If we have an idea that is small, we better leave it. In science, we have to do with the infinite. And the infinite is great. And so, the more we widen out our consciousness, the more we open our door of consciousness, the more scientific we act. The idea of science is great. How great? That's another question, you see. That's another question which a mother has to ask herself. A true mother, when she conceives the child, well, is she a true mother? she spends her promise wise. That's the secret of Mary, that she did spend the promise of her conception wide and wide and wide. She could see that the whole world would bless her and call her blessed, not just a little thing. Well, that means that during this week, we have to watch our thoughts, that the expectancy is great, that the idea that is going to be born to us is a great idea, that we give to this idea its enormity, its vastness, its eternity. Because we all know the human mind. The human mind is very well known to us. The human mind is small. The human mind has not a big promise. The human mind runs always after little things, never after big things. What are small things? Don't be shocked if I tell you this. The human mind runs after an idea one day, which is called health. The next day after an idea, which is called supply. The next day after an idea, which is called happiness. The next day, which is called good relationships. They are all ideas. But that's not the great idea. These are fragmentary ideas. They are little things. They are fragments of the whole. The whole is more than just health, than just supply, than just relationships. Grace is the idea. And it's the secret that within our consciousness we see that we don't limit this consciousness in any way or shape or form. See, Mrs. Eddy says, it's very nice, she says, principle is not to be found in fragmentary ideas. Ideas are always of God. But we must see that we don't run after fragmentary ideas. That's what we usually do. That's what, quite naturally, every student of science in the first years will do. So in the first years, they will run after fragmentary ideas. Ideas taken away, fragments, you see, is broken away from its principles. Therefore, all what some student may be interested, how can I solve my problem of supply? How can I solve my problem of business? How can I solve my problem, my relationship with the husband? How can I solve my problem in this and that way, or health? Well, that's all right. There's nothing to be said against it. There are ideas, of course. But what we must see is that we give birth to that which is whole, namely the whole idea of principle, and not fragmentary ideas of principle. The whole idea of principle. That's why perhaps you have seen or noticed in Mrs. Eddy's writings or textbook that sometimes she speaks of idea in the singular and very often in the plural. But you will always notice that when she speaks about something big, it's always in the singular. That principle has an idea. Principle and idea is one. She doesn't say principle and ideas are one or is one. See, that God has an idea. Now, what does that mean? Now, what that means, I can't tell you any more this morning. I think it's already 12 o'clock. But I just brought you, say, to that point where I can leave now that question of birth, which I tried to show you how necessary this question of birth is, of spirit is, instead of just thinking and thinking and thinking. You know, thinking has nothing to do with metaphysics. Metaphysics has to do with idea and not with thinking. We can leave the thinking to those metaphysicians who like to think and just think. But we have to do with God. And God hasn't a brain, and so God expresses himself in ideas. And if we want to go into the realm of reality, it's a realm of ideas and not the realm of thinking. Thoughts, divine thoughts, good thoughts, are translated forms of idea. An idea translates itself through the Christ consciousness to us as good thoughts, divine thoughts, positive thoughts. But those are already translated forms. But reality, when you skim that, you say skim the textbook through, when you go through the textbook very carefully, you will always see that Mrs. Eddy's realm is a realm of ideas, not of thoughts. It's a realm of ideas. That's the spiritual realm and the real realm. That spiritual realm translates itself to us as good thoughts, among others. It only translates itself as mind to the point of thought. As spirit, it doesn't translate itself to the point of thought. As spirit, it translates itself to us as spiritual qualities. Qualities of tenderness, qualities of loving, qualities of worshipping, qualities that have to do, so to say, with the heart and no more with thinking. You see, soul translates itself to us again in other qualities of steadfastness, not of thinking. The translated form of the ideas of soul are spiritual sense, spiritual understanding, steadfastness, perseverance. Well, you can't think to be perseverant either. You are perseverant or you are not. If most people say, I want to be perseverant, and think perseverant, and are not perseverant, because they always go out from the point of view of mind only. We have a God that is more than mind. We have a God that is spirit, and that is soul, and that is principle, and that is life, and that is truth, and that is love. A much bigger God. It's a big idea. Great is the idea, and the promise is as great as that. So, having shown the necessity of giving birth to a big idea, let me take this afternoon time to consider how big this idea is. And I just want to spend perhaps 2 hours this afternoon just to go over with you what you already know about the bigness of the idea of science. Then we have science. And then afterwards we have health. And then we can go with the key to this scripture and open up the epistles next week. So, have a good lunch.
Now, this morning we were considering one of the main ideas which should permeate this session, that was the tone of spirit, the woman's sense in us, the reflections of spirit, which can give birth to an idea and to our promise. And this afternoon I would like to consider the idea which is so big, the idea which has to be born. It is always the idea of science. In that passage in the chapter on Apocalypse, where Mrs. Eddy speaks about the woman in travail, and that she gave birth to the idea, she then afterwards shows that it is the idea of divine science. So I just want quietly and joyfully to consider with you what this idea of science really means and implies. And it may be points which I will consider with you, which you know since many years. Perhaps you have read about this already or heard some of my tapes about it. So they may not be new, but they are not new to me either. But I love them. And I always see that if we can love a big idea, that's the main thing. It mustn't always be something new. If we can be graceful and joyous over that which we see to be great, well, it does something to us. You know, one has been asking big thinkers like Newton and Leibniz and Einstein what they think why they were enabled to discover these new big truths. And I remember reading that all those great thinkers, they had one big ability. They had the ability to think over acknowledged truths over and over and over, 100 times, 200 times, 300 times, thinking them over, not superficially, but interested in it, adoring it, admiring it, standing in awe before it, and just thinking what it means. Until then, suddenly something new springs into thought, a new discovery. And that's the way I have watched my way, that I have never really been interested in new, in finding new things. That which I have seen new has always come when I was interested in worshipping that which I have found up to now to be great and big in science. And that unfolds in one's consciousness something more specific, something wider, something bigger. And you get it before you know that you have it. One gets a bigger view, a more exact view in this science before one is aware that one has found it. One finds it before one seeks it. Before you call, I will answer you. That's the law. So let's consider again together, simply just in big lines, what really the idea of science means. We know that the subject of what we are interested in is this infinite all, the one being. That's predominantly, uniquely, that which is interesting us, knowing that there is but one being, that being which is all and which is good, that being which is spirit. And therefore that realm of reality which is purely spiritual, that realm of reality which does not know anything that is not spiritual. Therefore, what we are considering this week is that realm which does not know anything human, anything material, does not know anything about motor cars, nothing about bodies, nothing about stock exchange, nothing about people, humans. It only knows the realm of the infinite. What is that realm of the infinite? Well, that realm of the infinite is the realm of ideas, and only ideas. In that realm of the ideas, there are no motor cars, no body, no human beings, no persons, no personal problems, nothing of that sense, that kind. God knows himself only as what God is. So God knows himself only as ideas. That's our realm. It's the absolute realm. It's the realm of spirituality. This realm of spirituality, therefore, can only be understood through ideas. Never through people, never through a body, never through matter, through material things. It's only known through ideas. Therefore, the importance of understanding what ideas are. And if we know that, then we know the tools of reality. Then we know the nature of reality. Then we know the elements of reality. So Mrs. Eddy says, from the infinite one in Christian science. She starts with the infinite one. From the infinite one in Christian science, comes one principle. There's only one principle. It's a very simple science. Comes one principle, and it's infinite idea. It's only in the singular, but it's infinite. So we have only one principle, and the infinite idea of this principle. And with this infinitude come spiritual laws, rules, and their demonstrations. You have science and health. You have the principle and its demonstration. But you can see, you see, that this infinite principle is understood through its idea, through the idea of principle, or through the idea of science. But it shows that it is not enough to try to understand this principle just through idea. Because it says, with this infinitude come also spiritual rules, laws. You begin to see that these ideas, in reality, that they are not isolated ideas. That these ideas have not an existence by themselves, but that they act and move in laws and in systems. That ideas have the ability or the nature that they are correlated to each other, and in that correlation act and move according to divine law, to divine laws in the plural, and that they are united and collegiated, you say collegiated, into one coherent system. Now that is what Mrs. Eddy understood under the term of science. That science is the interrelationship of ideas which can be known and understood. You know, the usual definition which we find in a dictionary about science is that science is knowledge reduced to system, reduced to law, and embodied in system. Now, Mrs. Eddy has used the term science for her discovery. The term science, as in the title of her textbook, and has used the term science about 1,000 times in her textbook. Well, she meant what she read, what she wrote. And therefore, the term science meant what the term science means, and not something else. What does the term science mean? Therefore, we can take the definition, any good definition of science, and you know how Mrs. Eddy always searched the dictionary to find the right word, appropriate word, so she meant it was science. But science is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in system. Well, that's something very, very different from that concept that science is knowing divine truth. My language clear enough that it is truth. Most people, most students of Christian science understand under science that they have an understanding or a knowledge of many, many divine truths. But that is not science. That doesn't amount to the meaning of science. Science is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in system. One of the clearest definition on science in this respect I found once in the Listener, that's the broadcasting paper in England, where a man from the Brain Trust, Dr. Voronofsky, a brilliant man, defined science very simply and said, science is not a fact-finding activity, but it is a fact-arranging activity. Well, that's an enormous difference. And in this very difference lies, so to say, the difference of what we people are doing and what the ordinary Christian scientist thinks he is or should do in his study. It is that we are not interested in fact-finding, in finding divine truth. We are interested in seeing how these divine truths are correlated to each other, are embodied in a system, are arranged to each other, if I may say so. It's not correct English, I know, but I try to explain, you see, what the difference is. So only then, when we understand divine truth in their relation to other divine truths, only then we begin to touch science. Only then. Up to then, we have just knowledge. Now, you can see that as long as we have just knowledge of isolated but true facts, divine facts, we have a very limited sense of truth. Because then our sense of truth is limited to the amount of truths which we have memorized or gathered together. And that will always be very limited. Whereas science must explain always God as a whole and never just a part of the whole. That's it, you see. That's the point. Now, I want to show you with a few examples what I mean with it this afternoon. I have set the tone, perhaps you have caught it, perhaps it's a repetition, but let's just ponder it. You know, Paul says, "For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away." That's what he saw. He said, well, at the moment when we are a child, we speak as a child. When we are at the moment, we may speak in part. We may know in part. We may prophesy in part. That's what we usually do when we learn a new subject, any new subject, really, that we know some truth about this subject. And we talk about these truths, and we think about these truths, but that's not science. He could see that when, as he say, that, but when that which is perfect is come, then we will do away with the part. We'll take the whole.